Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the stories we're covering today, Friday, June 29th, 2018. South Sudan's army spokesman says the president has ordered all forces to cease fire.
What is expected of SPLA forces is complete observation of cessation of hostilities. The president is the president of the republic and the commander-in-chief of the SPLA. So we will abide with the agreement and with his executive order.
And one analyst says if stability returns, South Sudan and Sudan will be back in business again.
South Sudan now desperately needs almost whatever it produces for domestic, for everyday consumption. Whatever the Sudan produces, whether in terms of, you know, agricultural products or whatever the commercial activities.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Both President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar have ordered their forces to observe the permanent ceasefire as part of the framework agreement they signed in Khartoum on Wednesday. Residents in the capital Juba say they hope soldiers on the ground will observe the ceasefire and the guns will fall silent once and for all. Nabil Biagio reports for VOA from Juba.
President Kiir declared the ceasefire through a presidential order read on his state television last night. South Sudan's army spokesperson, Brigadier General Lul Roy Kwang, says President Kiir and South Sudan's defense minister, Col Manyang, have instructed the SPLA division commanders to cease fighting and only use their weapons in self-defense if they come under attack.
What is expected of SPLA forces is complete observation of cessation of hostilities wherever they are. The president is the president of the republic and the commander-in-chief of the SPLA. So we will abide with the agreement and with his executive order. On top of that, we were officially informed yesterday and briefed by the Minister of Defense about the need to respect cessation of hostilities agreement, which of course is a permanent one.
The framework agreement calls on the warring parties to disengage and separate their forces who are in close proximity, withdraw allied troops, open humanitarian corridors, and release prisoners of war and political detainees. Kwang says he expects all soldiers to observe the instructions.
These are the topmost officials in the military. So when they give an order, it must be respected. Where there is a violation or where there would be violation, of course, the would-be perpetrators would be brought to book. There's no question about it. Our laws are very clear.
A written statement issued by Machar last night also declares a ceasefire, which officially goes into effect at midnight on Saturday. The statement obtained by South Sudan in Focus quotes Machar as saying, "I hereby order all SPLA-IO forces in South Sudan to observe this permanent ceasefire as agreed to in the said agreement." The SPLA in opposition deputy military spokesperson, Colonel Lampol Gabriel, says his group acted in kind when it heard the president's declaration.
The SPLA-IO welcomed the initiative from the president for declaring the ceasefire yesterday. And I'm very happy that he was the first to come out clearly by declaring it. The same thing also happened yesterday. Our chairman, Dr. Ed McCartney, also declared the ceasefire.
Gabriel told South Sudan in Focus by phone that his group will fully abide by the truce.
On our side, we are always above ceasefire whenever we are directed to do. We are ready to do that. We'll give freedom of movement to civilians and all NGOs. You will never hear of any NGOs being abducted or arrested.
Gabriel says his group will also cease all military operations, including road attacks on convoys traveling with military escorts. Juba resident Dud Dao says he's glad President Kiir and Machar made the declarations, but is skeptical that ceasefires will be observed.
Our president now just declared to the nation the ceasefire. Citizens are happy that the ceasefire has been declared. But the question is, what is the guarantee for that ceasefire? We have seen many ceasefires actually were declared by the president himself, but were later violated, and this is why even people are still running up and down. We just see what will happen in the near future.
Resident Yarlek says she is optimistic the ceasefire will be the beginning of the end to the nearly five-year-old conflict in South Sudan.
Finally, there is peace and agreement in South Sudan. All of us are happy. We are happy our nation will be no more fight. We hope the rebel and the other side will do the same.
International observers are waiting to see what happens as well. Binto Keita, the Assistant Secretary General for UN Peacekeeping Operations, told the UN Security Council this week that peace in South Sudan would only be sustainable through a fair and inclusive revitalized peace agreement that would take the root causes of the conflict into account. Members of the 15-nation organization cautiously welcomed the framework deal between President Kiir and Machar on Wednesday. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
Some Sudanese analysts say the recent Khartoum Declaration of Agreement signed among South Sudan's political rivals will benefit their country politically and economically if it is implemented. A professor at the University of Khartoum says the resumption of cross-border trade between Sudan and South Sudan will significantly improve the economies of both countries. And the head of a policy research institute says South Sudan's leaders should rebuild the country based on what he calls modern politics. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Khartoum, Sudan.
Ismail Hussein Fadul, a lecturer at the Institute of African and Asian Studies at the University of Khartoum, says the agreement signed on Wednesday will allow the economies of Sudan and South Sudan to grow if fully implemented. The nearly 5 years conflict interrupted oil production in South Sudan and devastated the economies of the two countries. Hussein says that situation is likely to change if the agreement is adhered to.
The resumption of the oil production, Sudan is going to have a lot of benefit from supporting of Southern Sudan oil through the pipeline. And even if the stability in Sudan and South Sudan, of course, the commercial activities, you know, between the two countries, yeah, is going to benefit Sudan very much.
Hussein notes South Sudan has been a big market for Sudanese goods and says if the agreement is implemented and stability returns to South Sudan, it will once again be the main market for Sudanese products for a long time to come.
South Sudan now desperately needs almost whatever it produces for domestic for everyday consumption. Whatever the Sudan produces, whether in terms of agricultural products or whatever the commercial activities.
Haj Hamad, the executive director for Social and Human Development Consultative Group, a Khartoum-based policy research institute, urges South Sudan's leaders to build an inclusive country to ensure long-lasting peace and stability for the country and the region.
Modern state formation, which should go above religion, above racism, above tribalism, above regionalism. It should be ruling by transparency, peaceful exchange of power, and community participation. So without creating a national patriotic elite who are really above this, there is always a difficulty for such kind of governments to continue.
Hamad says if the leaders in both Sudan and South Sudan want to develop their economies, they should learn from border communities that have coexisted peacefully and are able to depend on each other economically through border trade.
They have their own coping mechanism and they are already complementing each other at the grassroots. I hope that our politicians will learn from the tolerance of a peaceful coexistence that is being done by local communities across the border.
But Hussein says unless South Sudan's leaders show a commitment to establish a prosperous state, the Khartoum Declaration of Agreement will not be any different than the several signed agreements that have gone before.
There are a lot of agreements that they have had signed before even the last agreement which was signed in Khartoum, you know. What is missing is the will, the commitment to honor those agreements and to work faithfully and seriously to translate them into action.
Both Hamad and Hussein say South Sudan and Sudan have a lot in common and the two countries' leaders can and should work together to build strong economies. Sudan lost three quarters of its oil when South Sudan seceded in 2011. South Sudan has depended on oil for 98% of government revenues. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum, Sudan.
The U.S. Department of State renewed its travel advisory this week that was first issued in January, warning U.S. citizens against traveling to South Sudan due to its high crime rate and armed conflict. The advisory issued yesterday notes that violent crime, including carjackings, shootings, ambushes, assaults, robberies, and kidnappings, is common throughout South Sudan. A South Sudan Foreign Affairs Ministry official criticized the U.S. advisory, saying all citizens of different nationalities are free to come to the country, and the government is there to provide protection. Manyang David Mayar has this report for VOA from Juba.
The U.S. State Department says South Sudan is still a fragile state. Mark Weinberg is the public affairs officer at the U.S. Embassy in Juba.
We have these for every country in the world, and they are refreshed and renewed periodically, and that happened yesterday here for South Sudan, where the warning, statement didn't change at all. It still rates South Sudan as level 4, which advises U.S. citizens not to travel here because of crime and armed conflict.
Weinberg insists crime is common in South Sudan, including in the capital, Juba, and adds that violent conflicts continue in various parts of the country. As to the agreement signed on Wednesday between President Kiir and Riek Machar, Weinberg says once it is clear that the agreement is holding, the advisory could change.
We certainly hope that the recent agreement signed will lead to a true, durable, sustainable peace here in South Sudan. And these travel advisories are constantly renewed. So if conditions in the country do change, then you can expect to see the travel advisory change. But we need to see actual conditions on the ground change first.
The advisory urges U.S. citizens who decide to travel to South Sudan to avoid travel along border areas and avoid demonstrations and public gatherings, as such events can become violent. Mawiana Kol, the spokesperson in South Sudan's Foreign Affairs Ministry, admits there are parts of the country that are insecure, but he says the U.S. advisory is unnecessary. Mawian insists the Kiir administration is committed to protecting its citizens and foreign nationals, including U.S. citizens who travel to South Sudan.
Americans who want to come to South Sudan are still welcomed. Government is in control, and we are guaranteeing the safety of citizens, like our citizens. So anybody that comes here as a foreigner will also be treated like a citizen of South Sudan and will be protected by the government.
Mawian says even though the U.S. government continues to issue travel advisories to its citizens on South Sudan, Juba is constantly processing entry visas for many U.S. citizens who come to the country on private missions. For VOA News, I'm Manyang David Mayar in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A high-profile panel says migration is an economic boon to Africa. Find out more on that when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
is there ever a time when information should be censored?
For public interest, there's no information that is supposed to be restricted. Because we need information, and the public needs information. They need awareness. They need to know what is not known.
I believe there are certain times when information has to be censored, when it may lead to misunderstandings and wars and maybe riots.
I think it depends on the situation. If a censoring will bring peace, then we should do it.
Yeah, it will depend on the way you had the information or the way you explained it to someone. If it is a bad information, so you just know the way you are going to explain to that person, the way to understand.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. A high-level panel on migration says sub-regional migration on the continent is brisk and having a beneficial impact on African economies. During a two-day meeting in Geneva, the panel has been exploring ways to maximize these benefits by making migration safe, orderly, and regular. Lisa Schlein has more for VOA.
The UN Migration Agency reports 1 billion people are currently on the move, yet media reports of migration crises such as those in the Mediterranean Sea and along the border between the United States and Latin America tend to paint a negative image of this process. Rarely do they discuss the many contributions made by migrants to their adoptive societies. Former Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf is chair of the high-level panel on migration. She says it is time to end this misperception of migrants and to demystify migration on the African continent. Sirleaf says the human tragedy unfolding in the Mediterranean Sea makes it seem that hordes of migrants are fleeing Africa. She tells VOA, though the number of Africans crossing over is relatively small.
But because they face such hardships, because many times their rights are infringed upon, these get the sensational reports. And then it forms this perception that the majority of Africans are trying to leave the continent to seek opportunities. But the reality is really far from the perception.
Sirleaf says data show within the continent 70% of the overall migration is intra-African, that is, Africans moving from one African country to another. Former Liberian President Sirleaf says the free movement of goods and services and development strategies require the free movement of people across national boundaries. She says this will enable African countries to explore opportunities and achieve economic transformation. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A tech firm that is introducing low-income earners in Africa to affordable and easy-to-use solar power is among this year's winners of the Global Ashton Awards. The awards recognize and reward pioneers in sustainable energy. From Nairobi, reporter Ruben Chama has more on Engaza. That's a pay-as-you-go technology used to make clean energy products affordable to those not connected to national power grids, including people in South Sudan. From Nairobi, Ruben Chama reports.
Engaza, which has distributors through sub-Saharan Africa, won the Financial and Business Model Innovation Award for its solutions. The firm, which has offices in Nairobi, Kenya and San Francisco, California, creates solutions that allow clean energy products such as solar lanterns and charging points that can be remotely controlled, including being switched on and switched off, so they can run on a pay-as-you-go basis. Jane Kimani, Director of East Africa Operations at Engaza, received the award on behalf of the energy tech company.
We are very excited about that recognition. It validates our work. It says that we are doing the right thing. We thank the Ashton community for bringing us into the stable to join other companies that are innovating. Besides prize money, I think for us we see an opportunity to really network with others who are like-minded. We have many billions of people, 1.2 billion to be precise, who are off-grid and who are continuing to suffer. And so we are all aligned in the same vision in terms of trying to remove the barriers that exist.
Sarah Butler-Slows is the founder director of Ashden. She commended the winners, saying that each was helping in different ways to transition to a low-carbon world that brings huge environmental, health, and economic benefits. But there are challenges to overcome, especially among small businesses. Kimani says one major drawback facing smaller companies is how to raise enough capital in return for small upfront payments from customers. This, she says, makes it difficult for local distributors to expand their businesses to reach more underserved communities.
The biggest challenge is that limitation of working capital for them to be able to scale up their businesses. In terms of products, products exist. The barrier really is in this ability to pay. So on the customer side, a lot of poverty has made it impossible for families to access these high-quality products. And so what happens is people are using products that are carbon-emitting and causing them health risks, death.
The senior official from the Kenya-based tech firm says African countries can learn some lessons from India and provide tax incentives for imported solar panels.
If you look at India as a market, there's a lot of government incentive. Families, you know, co-pay for some of these products with the support of government. So I think on the policy side, definitely, there can be a better collaboration between private sector and public, driving the agenda of clean energy and inclusiveness. In terms of tax breaks, I think we can do a better job, particularly if I look at Kenya, there's still a lot of tax that's imposed on importing some of these products.
The Hashinen Awards are a globally recognized measure of excellence in the field of sustainable energy, and winners receive tailored support to help scale up their work and a prize of up to 20,000 British pounds, or around $26,000. Angaza was among 10 winners drawn from around the world for providing benefits to societies most at risk from the impact of climate change. Some 1.2 billion people around the world have no access to a power grid, according to the International Energy Agency. Ruben Chama reporting for VOA News in Nairobi.
The FIFA World Cup is dominating sports headlines all over the world, and sports fans are celebrating wins as well as lamenting the losses of their favorite teams in Russia. Meanwhile, a United Nations panel in Geneva is taking a closer look at the influence of human rights in sports. Ayen Dangbior has that story from Washington.
South Sudan raised the Olympic flag in Juba on Saturday as a gesture of its entrance into the Olympic family and the upcoming Olympic Games in Japan 2 years from now. Tong Chol Malek, Secretary General of the South Sudan National Olympic Committee, told a local radio station the flag-raising ceremony had been delayed due to scheduling issues. In a separate event, Thomas Bach, the International Olympic Committee president, who spoke at a UN panel on sports and human rights this week in Geneva, says sports can transcend any game and help develop leadership skills of athletes around the world.
It's about universality and it's about non-discrimination. And therefore, in sport, and there I can make reference to what I said before, that this world law of sports, yeah. And because of this world law of sports, we are in fact, we are all equal.
Yeah. Yeah.
There on the yeah. field of play, yeah. you're alone,
yeah.
and you're equal.
Yeah.
To all the others.
Dignity, respect, fairness, rules of the game, and enforcement are some of the words associated with sports. But Zayed Ra'ad Al Hussein, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, who spoke at the same panel in Geneva, says those ideas are also consistent with human rights.
The ethnicity, whatever the criteria may be, is second or actually almost irrelevant to the performance itself. It's the beauty, the grace, the power of the performance, which I think all of us celebrate as human beings, that there's some amazing people on this planet. And I think this is the sort of this is what binds us as a human race.
Buck agrees and says he could sum up the importance of sports in one word, respect.
It would be a respect for others. It would be a respect for rules. It would be respect for yourself and your limits.
A 2015 report by the U.S. government-funded National Institutes of Health says playing sports helps build character, teaches and develops strategic thinking, analytical thinking, leadership skills, goal setting, and risk-taking. Ayen Dangbior, VOA News, Washington.
And in World Cup action on Thursday, you may have noticed that Colombia beat Senegal 1-0, officially knocking out the last of this year's five African teams. For reaction to Senegal's elimination, as well as more World Cup news, here's VOA's Gwen Newton.
Well, hope turned into despair for Senegalese fans following Thursday's crushing defeat against Colombia. Their elimination leaves no African team in the knockout stages for the first time in 36 years, a fact not lost on this Senegalese fan.
I think that it just shows how much it's difficult for African countries, because I believe all the African countries with Senegal are unfortunately going home. But, you know, the passion is there. It's just that the means are not there to make sure that the best get the best training and compete and are able. But I believe we will get there one day.
Senegal bows out in third place behind Japan. Poland defeated Japan in a 1-0 victory, but despite the win, Poland will not make it out of the group stage, finishing in last place. And despite the loss, Japan moves on to the round of 16 thanks to the FIFA fair play rule. After the match, the mood was a bit subdued on both sides. First, we'll hear from a Polish fan and then a fan from Japan.
We feel disappointed because the end of the game was a real disaster because from both sides, yeah, in my opinion, it wasn't football. Yeah, of course, Japanese knows about the result between Colombia and Senegal. We were satisfied because we had 3 points, but to be honest, it cannot be on Mundial. We expect from the players that they will play to the end, yeah, not theater. It was theater.
Happy, but it's boring. Happy, it's boring. Why? But we lost. You know, we can go to, you know, final tournament, but we lost. So happy and boring. It was not good, you know, for soccer. You know, we lost. You know.
Japan will next face Belgium on Monday. Belgium came away with a 1-0 victory over England and a top spot in the Group G standings. England is second in that group. Ahead of Thursday's match, a reporter asked England goalkeeper Jordan Pickford whether his team would prefer to finish second in their group to have an easier World Cup campaign.
Our mentality is to win every game we're playing, and we want to win every game, and I feel like if we win every game, it just keeps building momentum to keep going in the tournament. And we know Belgium's a top opponent, and we need to be on our A game to get the win. And I feel our squad in the camp, we want to win every game we're playing, so we can't be looking into that.
Both England and Belgium advanced to the round of 16. As I mentioned, Belgium will face Japan on Monday. England plays against Colombia on Tuesday. And finally, Tunisia and Panama had already failed to progress to the last 16 before their Thursday match. But with their 2-1 victory, Tunisia came away with their first World Cup win since 1978. And Tunisian fans said, finally!
Finally, after 40 years, it's our second victory, so we are so happy.
Oh, we are so happy because Tunisia today win the match, and it was so awesome. The 2 goals were so awesome. So thank you, Tunisia, for making us happy here.
Tunisia finishes their World Cup run in third place ahead of Panama in Group G. For South Sudan in Focus, I'm Gwen Uten in Washington.
Thank you, Gwen. And that is our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Bendeko by Dudu Kopa.
Ingoya Zekina, Awe, Batu Obombi, Cliff Ombessa, le motivateur des motivés, Ngabo, Yomo Tavakono.
Nice song. We've been listening to Dudu Kopa with the song Bendeko. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for listening. We'd like to hear what you think about our show. You can find us on the web at southsudan@voanews.com or reach us on Facebook. Our title is South Sudan in Focus. Have a safe and happy weekend, and join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Me por poema mo que ni mo tsotolinga linda yo te lo coba te como que na